Welcome to episode 27 of Digital Outbox. Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Ian. Joining me again this week is Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hello. I'm back. You are back. And it's just us back again.
Yep, we've been abandoned once more.
I know. This is a trend.
It's just a busy time of year, isn't it?
No, I think they're fed up with us.
And that. I was trying to avoid that.
No, I think we've all fell out. It's the end. It's the end before we've even begun.
Oh, is that it then?
Yeah, so thanks for listening. And
quick as whatever, yeah. No, so you're feeling better? You've had a bit of a dodgy week?
I had a little bit of a dodgy week. A wee bit of sickness and sore heads and lost iPhones and found iPhones.
Yeah, so you've been reunited with your iPhone.
I have.
The way you can tell you were ill is that you left it.
The shock. It was shock and awe when people figured out what had happened. And I was like, yep, I've lost it. Yeah. But I was reunited. It was emotional. I had tears in my eyes.
Just make, you know, once you lose something, you realise how much you love it.
But we're now back for good. I feel like I need some cheesy Take That music on hand.
That's
right
the only
now.
Bit of cheesy music you haven't got on hand.
It is, but I will fix that in the edit.
Yeah, so I've had a bad week as well. I've been working stupid hours.
Yeah, I saw your mail. It sounds pretty hectic. But you sound fresh and up for the podcast.
Well, that's because I've been drinking cups of tea.
Fantastic. Before we go on, I believe you've got a shout out.
Oh yeah, to Jess. So for those who did listen all the way to the end last week, you realised that I'd forgotten to do the shout out. And now I've made that very public and clear by doing it at the beginning. But anyway, hello Jess.
And I'd just like to say hello as well, seeing as me that remembered, because he hasn't mentioned you for the last hour either. Totally forgotten about it again.
Shh,
2 weeks in a row.
Shush now. Shush now.
If you've not lost your testicles by now, you have this week. Our first story this week is Johnston Press, which I don't know if you've heard of them, have you?
No, I don't think anyone really heard of them.
No, well, seemingly Johnston Press actually owns more than 300 newspapers across Britain, and I've never heard of them. But they're introducing a pay-for access on their online content. So a £5 for 3 months subscription, and they're trialling it on six regional newspapers. And they're obviously six high-quality regional newspapers, including the Worksop Guardian, the Ripley and Heanor News, the Whitby Gazette, the Northumberland Gazette, and in Scotland, the Carrick Gazette and the Southern Reporter.
I wouldn't be without any of those, Ian.
Fine titles, indeed. So
essential reading.
£5 for 3 months doesn't sound that bad.
No, I mean, I don't know what the cover price is on local newspapers. It doesn't seem like it's a huge amount of money. But is it something that we would have paid for before?
Well, these in Glasgow, these kind of local papers that used to get... There was some shady West End one that used to pop through the door. They were always free, but they were full of adverts. And the news reporting was of the quality, like, you know, somebody's wing mirror got smashed last night and the police are investigating.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are plenty of local newspapers that do have a cover price, but again, they would be supported by advertising. So I guess it's the angle of by putting a paywall up, are you, you know, reducing the number of people that are going to be actually... reading your stories enough that actually there has to completely take over from advertising revenue, because obviously the more advertising revenue goes up with the more number of readers you've got.
Yeah, and I think that's about the issue we were talking about with the Murdoch last week. You know, if they start charging and if they delist from Google, is the charging enough to take away from the Google impact?
Yeah, and so that is the balancing act. And is it just that they have to find an advertising model that's moving away from their their hard copies and onto online, and is it advertisers that need to sort of accept that that's where the audience is now, rather than the other way around? So this whole thing it's all sort of tangled in together, isn't it? So Rupert Murdoch's going along a similar lines, but obviously with a bit more impact than Johnston Press.
I guess what was it? There was an interesting quote in the BBC article. It was from the Guardian, just saying that the well, what they found is once you start restricting access on websites, that content can be found elsewhere, generally for free.
Yeah. So,
but I think they're looking at it. I mean, the Guardian and Observer themselves, they're in trouble. So I think there's an acknowledgement that you've got to do something different to keep going.
And I don't think anyone's saying that, you know, that this isn't something they should be trying, at least. I think people are thinking it's not going to work, and so therefore, why bother? But, you know, who knows? If I think Murdoch's probably got the power and the authority to try and do these things. And it seems like Google are a little bit at least worried about how things are going, because they've actually... this week they've announced that they're changing the way that their Google News service works.
Well, it looks like they've blinked, doesn't it?
Yeah, so the first to blink. But I guess it's because they understand that, you know, that they've got a role to play in this. They don't want to lose that indexing.
No.
So whereas before you could go to Google News and you could sort of view the headlines and click through to the news stories, even if they were sat behind a firewall on the main website, Google News offered you a way of, you know, clicking through to actually read the whole story. They've changed that now so that you can only view the whole story, view five stories in any one month before. I think it's a month, maybe a week. I'm not even sure. It might be a day.
You have had.
Told you I had a busy week.
It's a day.
Okay, so it's five stories a day. You can click through from Google News and then you can read the full story without having to pay. On the sixth click, you will be taken to that provider's paywall in order to view the whole story. Previously people realised what's the point in paying for these subscriptions when you can go through Google News and you don't have to pay. But they've changed that now. I guess it's actually a more sensible thing for the content providers. And it's something Google, I think, probably had to do to keep it relevant. Whether there's any five stories from any one provider that you're going to need to view in a day, I don't know.
That was going to be my point. That I generally, it's like a pick and mix. I will pick up a smattering of stories from a whole of the different sources. It's not just one. You know, I don't want to be just solely from The Guardian. And heaven help me, I don't want to be just from the Daily Mail. You know, I want to be all of the different sources.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up, instead of being five articles a day, it might actually be less than that.
Yeah.
But I think that's generally the thing around this whole issue, is that, you know, when you buy one newspaper, you buy it for relatively little that's of interest to you in that particular newspaper, because there's obviously a whole ton of other stuff in there that's interesting to other people.
Yeah.
But when you don't have to buy all the other stuff, you're not going to.
No, definitely not.
So therefore, in any one publication, there probably are only a few stories that actually you want to read. And I think that's another thing that these massive content providers have to get around, that news stories have their own audience, each individually, and you can't really tie them all together into one newspaper. So maybe some sort of consolidation service that puts news that's of interest to you into one place daily would be a better model.
I think maybe a generation before, there was maybe a kind of brand loyalty, but I don't think that's the case now.
So it's actually the journalism and the quality of that and the topics they're talking about, which is more important. So everyone's newspaper would effectively be something different if they could choose it.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting thing to look into.
Definitely. We've now got a whole smattering of Google stories. They've been fairly busy this week. So the first up is Google Public DNS has been launched. So this is a DNS resolver. Open to the public. It's easy to change on your PC, Mac, router, whatever device however you want to change it. They have been fairly open about what they are keeping, so they're only going to keep temporary logs and erase all the information it collects through this service within 24 to 45 hours. Mm. Now, I guess it's going back probably about 3 years. I swapped to using OpenDNS. I don't know if you've stuck with your ISP's DNS provider or whether you've changed.
I did go through a stage of using OpenDNS. And it seemed to work very well. But then I think when I changed providers, I just went with the standard ISP one again.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm on it now. I'm pretty sure I'm not, because I haven't got any of the OpenDNS sort of pages coming up.
Yeah, so I I changed, being the resourceful geek, wanting to try it out. I actually thought at first that, I mean, it felt fast, but I actually just felt a couple of sites just seemed a bit slower. And then I think it was the next day, and we'll put the blog in the show notes. There was a blog that had a little script that you could run, which would just let you check just how fast Google was in comparing to OpenDNS. And I think they were comparing it to, I think on the website, it compared to Level 3, which I think was a DNS provider in America. So I swapped in the script to O2, who is my current ISP, and ran the script. And what was quite interesting was OpenDNS was generally faster. And there was a couple of sites that were only just a touch faster, but it wasn't in Google, it was O2. Google was never the fastest option for me.
So now, it might be that it's offering a sort of middle of the road at the moment.
Well, I think it depends where you are. If you visit the website that we'll, as I said, we'll put in the show notes, and it's the address is manu-j.com/blog. If you go to that site, there's people from all around the world have been running a script, and he's put up the results. And it looks like if you're in America and you're in South America, then Google is certainly coming out as a far better option than OpenDNS. So I think it's one of these, your mileage will vary, but certainly for me, whether it's across the UK, my results seem to tie up with somebody else's results from London that had been posted.
Yeah, so there's a London there that's sort of saying OpenDNS is by far the quickest,
yep,
with Google coming in sort of middle ground on a lot of the timings.
Yeah, and what I found was O2 was generally actually very quick, but it seemed to be very quick on the big popular sites and some of the smaller sites, you know. So I'd added in, obviously, our blog, which is digitaloutbox.com. I'd added in my blog. I tried rememberthemilk.com. So maybe some sites that's not as big and popular. What I found was the O2 DNS was a lot slower for those. And Google's was slightly slower for, like, Remember the Milk. But an OpenDNS was generally much the same for all of them.
I think it's only fair to point out, firstly, that for the majority of internet users, they aren't going to go down to this fine grain level of geekiness. They're just going to go with what setup they're given. It could be that ISPs end up, you know, using Google as their default DNS. You never know. But it is quite an important. We are talking milliseconds of difference here.
But
obviously, if there's 12 requests done per, you know, looking serving of a page, then that can add up.
Agreed, but just some background to that as well. I mean, we're talking milliseconds, but generally, I find it's, you know, I'm using OpenDNS. I feel it's a far faster browsing experience. If you go to Jason Kotke's site, he had an interesting post, which was an article from Google, and I think it was backed up by Amazon, which showed that a half second drop in speed for Google during when they're doing their benchmarking and they're doing their usability tests, the half second drop in speed resulted in a 20% drop in revenue and traffic. Wow. And that was backed up by Amazon.
Yeah, so that's huge.
You know, so we're talking milliseconds, but by the time you add all that up, it's making a phenomenal difference. And I can go back a few years, and it was the old, you know, if a page doesn't launch in 5-6 seconds, you just move on.
Hmm.
You know, and I'm still much the same. If it's just so impatient, you know, I'll go back and just find a Google Cache version.
I wonder whether this is all coming in now because of the Chrome OS. This offers them a way of controlling every last aspect of that operating system,
so,
doesn't it?
And one crucial difference, OpenDNS actually does redirects. So if a domain cannot be found, or if it's a malicious site, the OpenDNS will direct you to a search page with search results and advertising. I think it's from Yahoo and maybe also from Google themselves. So they're doing a bit of filtering and redirecting on your behalf, and they also offer some shortcut services and some security services. So there is something on top from OpenDNS, and they also a premium service. And their kind of director came out with a bit of a response, which was interesting, because
you know what his response sounded like? Me, 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 me.
It sounded like I'm stuffed.
it sounded like someone quite worried, but desperately trying to pull out positives.
The thing was, his first point was, you know, if you go to Google's public DNS, then that's Google's view of the world you're getting. And I'm like, hold on, they're not doing any redirects, and you do.
Yeah.
And it was just, I don't know, it was just daft. It just looked like a total knee-jerk. And fair enough, yes, they offer a slightly, for me, a quicker service. I'm kind of happy with the redirects. It's not getting in my way. And there are some features that I don't take advantage of, but I could do.
He also was trying to sell you the social responsibility benefits of him running this service.
Yep.
And how Google really don't care about you, and there's nothing to say that they're not going to use their information in a dodgy way. And give him a big enough check to buy out OpenDNS. If Google came along and wanted to buy it, he'll sell up.
Well, it's quite a lot of blogs within the space of 12 hours were saying OpenDNS were bought by Microsoft. There's no way that with Google setting this up, that Microsoft or one of the other big tech companies is going to let them own DNS.
And will his social responsibility ramblings then stay? He's going to go with the money.
Yeah, so, of course he will. I think one to watch for next year.
Yeah.
Whether that explodes into a bit of a DNS war.
And what a... it's only a war that the geeks are going to be interested in.
Oh, it'll be a fascinating one, but I'm sure.
So another announcement from Google this week that they have released a dictionary.
Whee!
So you can get to google.com/dictionary, and that's about all I need to say about that.
You get all the big news this week.
It's huge, that one.
But I guess it's another, you were talking about, it's another, I mean, the DNS was another part. I guess the dictionary is another part of the tool set.
And if it comes with an API, which most Google things tend to come with eventually, fantastic. Another thing for me to plug into as a developer.
Fantastic. They're also launching a UK property dimension. And that's how it was described in the news article, so I've kept with it. Seemingly it's already available in Australia. Basically, you'll be able to, I assume it'll be Google Maps, pull up Google Maps and add on a layer of houses for sale and see information on it. The difference being it's not just going to be information from established estate agents. You will be able to add your own property for sale details on.
I mean, from a consumer point of view, sounds great. You're interested in moving to an area, bring up Google Maps and see all the places exactly where they are.
Yeah.
It's a great mashup.
And indeed. And Rightmove shares were down 10% within 15 minutes of this being announced.
Because it takes out the middleman.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where, I don't know, you see more and more. I guess there's a big privacy and issue around Google owning all this. Are we going to end up just being totally bought into just one player, and then we'll end up with the same issues that we had with Microsoft, I guess, if you go back 8-9 years, and Microsoft seemed the only option for a lot of people.
I guess the difference is from a consumer's point of view, none of these things are at cost to us, are they? So it's hard to turn them down. It's the sweetie jar, isn't it?
Yeah. And as you're saying, you know, if Chrome comes along next year and offers a really fast, compelling way of working.
Yeah, history is the only thing that's going to be able to tell us that, isn't it?
Exactly. So, our final... we've split our show up into Apple and gadgets again, but there's themes running through them all. Maybe we shouldn't split them up. Bing Maps, we've mentioned a number of times, and it's only recently that the UK Maps get switched on. But a beta came out this week. I don't know if you had a chance to play around with it in your busy schedule.
I can't say that I did during the week, but when I saw that you'd put the story in, I thought, oh crap, I better get onto that.
So this is, at first glance, it looks much the same. You hit the URL, which is bing.com/maps/explore, but this time it needs Silverlight. So the previous versions didn't need the plugin, this one does. I know some people just think, oh no, another plugin, and just won't use it. I installed it. You can install it on Mac as well as PC and Linux. And what a difference it makes.
It's incredible.
Yeah, so it automatically took me into a nice view of Glasgow. As I zoomed in, it automatically changes to what it perceives as the best view, as in moving from a map view to the aerial photography. Now, as you zoom in closer, you've got I can't remember what it's called, the kind of north, south, east, west kind of close-up views of houses. And even that animated quite slickly. That was really nice. But there wasn't really that much else that you could see in and around Glasgow. So I went to Los Angeles, and there they've got an equivalent to Google Street View called Streetside.
So Streetside. unique.
Indeed. You can. I think that there must just be a big chart of what Google does and what we're going to call it. But it again,
and then a big pile of elves that gets all these things done overnight, it seems.
Aye. But the animations were superb, you know, so you pick up the little blue man, you drop him in, and a nice animation takes into the street. And I thought that worked really nicely.
You can really see where the plug, you know, using the plugin has enhanced their maps.
Definitely, definitely.
It's not something current. I mean, you probably can do it via, you know, coding in JavaScript, whatever, but it's just never going to be as slick as this, I don't think.
No. So one of the other things I've plugged in is Photosynth. Which you can see, there's quite a lot of them in London. There's only a couple in Glasgow. There's a lot in America. So you can click on a photosynth and you can start to spin round and even take tours around certain areas.
You can see how they've also integrated there. I think it's called Sea Dragon, the technology where they've got massive images that they've worked a way of showing them almost instantly when you zoom and move around.
Definitely.
So when you zoom in on the maps, it doesn't have to load up lots of different tiles.
No.
It adds fidelity as you zoom more and more into it. And very, very clever.
I was really impressed.
I hadn't even realised it was such a big change when I saw the story going and I had a look around. It's the speed that these things are appearing now. Microsoft are going at this massively. Yeah. Well, they've realised what they're missing out on, I think.
Definitely. I mean, and if you click on the apps layer, and again, hardly any of them are relevant to the UK. I know we always said we'd be more UK focused, but I don't think you can ignore these things. If you look at the apps layer, you can see, you know, local tweets, other photographs, local services. It's really, really, you know, a really rich environment now.
This is all coming here. I mean, okay, exactly. They do tend to be leading in America a little bit with these things, but it's all coming here, and it'll be here quickly.
Yeah.
I think this it's more mashable, isn't it? It's the important thing about their maps. It seems to be that they're going for this application layer on top of their maps more strongly.
Definitely. And it's I know it needs a plugin. I just don't have an issue with it. And at the same time, I don't know if there was a story this week, and I didn't put it in the show notes, but it looks like Google Gears, which was Google's answer for working offline, they're kind of it's in limbo basically. They will maintain it to keep it the functionality working as it is now, but they're going to focus on HTML5. So they seem to be going purely the HTML route and no plugins.
I think they have to for their OS to work.
Yep. And just following up on that, Monday, Google have announced a search event. So the Bing Maps beta was done through an event last week. So Google are doing an equivalent on Monday. So it'll be interesting to see what they bring to the table. And I just think the competition in this space now is really hotting up.
Microsoft, probably the only other firm that have got the kind of clout to be able to do what they've done, but they've put together an impressive suite of applications. They've got the advertising, they've got the maps, they've got the search, all of which they didn't really have before.
No, well, Bing's been a really big success this year.
Yep.
I think it's. I think we kind of laughed about it at first, but I think it's been really, really good.
Well, they've got a compelling suite of applications now for their mobile. So when we see Windows Mobile 7 coming out later in 2010, who knows what that's going to be like? But there's a lot of things to call on now. Definitely enough to be able to, you know, approach the kind of iPhone type things and that.
That's a bit. I just think they'll mess up. I don't know why. I just don't think
they haven't got a good track record, have they? But no. Then we've seen some Windows Mobile 6.5 phones come out recently that are being raved over, and no one thought that was possible.
Yeah, but they've been raved over, but they're still behind an iPhone that is, you're coming up for 3-year-old.
Yeah, well, and iPhone are going to react, so we'll see what they react with.
But that's a bit I can't go over. A 3-year-old phone is still basically the best phone you can get right now.
Hmm.
Mm. I know in some people's eyes it's not. You can go and get a Droid and all that good stuff and it's better, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Buy Apple. Speaking of Apple, a story that broke today is that Apple has bought Lala.
Lala. Sorry, I don't know where that came from. It's never coming back again.
You Teletubby loving fool.
Again.
Oh no.
What's happened to me?
Well, I was going to say you've turned into a Teletubby, but hey. The Apple have finally, looks like they've spent some cash and have bought one of the kind of hot streaming music companies. The reports today are saying that they it looks like they've bought the engineering talent rather than the actual service or platform itself. It's quite interesting. I must admit, I hadn't really looked at Lala before, and I think we've been focused in the UK and Spotify and what it can do. But Lala scans your hard drive of the music you own and then creates an online music library that matches that collection. So you're not actually having to upload your music on there. It's saying, well, we've got this library anyway, so why create multiple copies of it? Here's just what you've got, and makes it available.
And it only makes the songs that you've got available, does it?
Allegedly, if you go on the website, but it looks like you can play any songs if you create a login. And okay. I don't know the cost behind it, and I don't know all the economics behind it. I've not looked into it enough. But I'm guessing iTunes 10 at some point next year will start to offer some music in the cloud.
Well, I think I said it a while back, which I think they have to at least look down that route. To whether you have to buy something from iTunes in order to have then access to that service, that's what I see happening. So you might pay for an album, and then that gives you a month's worth of access to something like the Lala service.
Yeah, and I think that'll be another one of next year's kind of hot topics. As we've seen Spotify this year getting a lot of press here. It's not hit America yet, but I can see by the end of next year probably a kind of almost winner out of these cloud-based music services.
Well, the good thing about having cloud-based music services is that the music stays in the control of whoever, you know, is distributing it. And okay, Spotify, yes, you can have local playlists downloaded, but that only lasts as long as your subscription lasts.
Yeah.
So it's a way of them easily managing the content. And as a user, it's great because we can access it anywhere.
No, definitely.
It makes much more sense to us, especially in a world that's connected. You know, if the connection, if our access to the internet doesn't get better, which Digital Britain looks like it's going to, seems to be, it might actually end up causing it to be worse, then these services fall down. But in a world where we've got access wherever we go, these things are perfect. They're a solution to everything.
Yeah, but I still have a fear about the infrastructure in the UK supporting all this.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's there.
If everyone starts doing it, you mean?
Yeah.
I think you're right, but then again, sometimes that kind of need then pushes on the infrastructure, doesn't it? Government will suddenly start realising that they have to put more money into it, or they have to use more taxes to do it.
You're in La La Land.
Yeah, I think I am.
Christmas is coming.
Really?
Yeah. I feel I should be on cue playing one of my Christmas tunes.
Mind you, I haven't done any Christmas shopping.
I've done most of mine. Fantastic.
There you go.
Go
on then, are we going to have music?
No, I can't be arsed.
No doubt we'll get charged a license fee if we do.
Yeah, but it's a... Yeah, anyway. iTunes 12 Days of Christmas has been announced. I think they did this last year, and it was some free music, a different track each day. And doing the same again this year, from the 26th of December to the 6th of Jan. It's a free song or music video, or an app, or a TV episode, or a film.
But isn't that the same as the free on iTunes feature that they've had all year, but they've just changed the name of it because it's Christmas?
Bloody Scrooge, aren't you?
Well,
it's Christmas, man, and it's free.
Yeah, but okay, but I think I'm pretty sure all year I've been downloading free tracks from free on iTunes. Maybe not per day.
Yeah, I noticed you skipped a legal question. Anyway, iTunes 12 Days of Christmas, starting on the 26th of December. I'm sure it'll be great.
I can't wait.
You are such a Scrooge. Honestly. Our final segment is gadgets and games. First up is an interesting little device from one of the founders of Twitter, and it's called Square. So this is an actual physical device and a service. It plugs into, so it's a little kind of white box, plugs in via the audio jack on iPhone or Droid currently, and it lets you scan your credit card, and it actually allows a vendor to accept physical credit card payments from their mobile phone. They hope that the device is going to be free, and I guess the advantage for the customer is you get your, it's like paperless receipts, so your receipts are either email, SMS, or on screen. You can sign with your finger on the iPhone screen, which I know is a bit kind of gadgety cool, but I quite liked it. And there's a, if you actually sign up to the service as well, you can associate your photo so your vendor can actually check to make sure it's physically you.
So is this the vendor that's got it on there plugged into their iPhone as a kind of terminal?
Yes.
And then they swipe your card through it?
Yes.
Or if they're someone in the pub, they nick your card, swipe it through it. There's something that feels very... I'd need to be convinced about this one as a consumer.
Well, so you sound like Mr. kind of oldie worldy Luddite. Somebody's going to nick my card.
I feel like a bit like
this
that.
This is another way of me losing my money. And I guess I was looking at it as a kind of exciting little tech geek that I could set up my stall to sell my illegal software, and I can have one of these, and I can actually take money off from the credit cards legally. It'd be fantastic.
I feel skeptical about this. For one thing, how is this going to work in the UK where we don't swipe cards? And in fact, supermarkets aren't even allowed to swipe cards anymore. It has to be chip and pin. So that's not going to work here for a start, is it?
I've no idea.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure all our cards now have to be done chip and pin. I know the swipe's still there, but I'm pretty sure it's not allowed to be used. So that's going to break it for one. But just the
maybe
other, I mean,
maybe
why?
Maybe there'll be a bigger dongle that comes out, and you just put your pin in.
But why would any company that's offering this not have a little terminal to put their cards in anyway?
Because the terminal costs a lot of money, and these don't. Device is free. So the terminal costs money. If you're a really small firm,
but if you're a small firm, you've got to have a merchant account to be able to accept credit card payments,
right?
And normally, a merchant account will come with a terminal of some sort. If you're a shop,
yeah, I thought the terminals cost quite a bit of money. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a shop.
Okay.
You.
No, I'm a PC.
Oh my god. Anyway, I thought it looked like the future has arrived.
I saw it completely differently. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, I just thought it looked a really nice way of just making a quick, easy payment. I didn't think it was any more insecure than something like chip and pin, which I still convinced to this day is worse than what we used to have. But there you go.
Yeah.
More bad news. For, I guess, anybody that lists after new gadgets. The Crunch Pad, which we've talked about before when we've been talking about the other mythical tablet, the Apple tablet or pad. The Crunch Pad is no more. So it looks like they've had a spectacularly, unimaginable breakup.
Because the Crunch Pad, last I heard, they had been putting it through user testing. It was pretty stable. It worked.
Had stuff
running on it.
But every time somebody asked them, they kept on saying, "Yeah, we're a month away." And I think they've been saying that since June or July. And so, if you don't know what the Crunch Pad is, it was originally started off at a $200 to $300 device, maybe like a 10-inch touchpad, and it ran a web browser. So it lets somebody sit and run a web browser on a really thin, light device with quite a nice battery life. And it was touchscreen. So that was the whole concept. And it got a lot of people quite excited, because that's all you need sometimes. It's just this really easy to use, lightweight. I just need to record. I just need to be on the web. So they found hardware partners, and they got some nice looking designs up and running. Not entirely un-Apple-like in some of the way it looked. But three or 4 days ago, the guy behind this, so it's Michael Arrington, who runs TechCrunch, and I must admit, the guy looks a complete arsehole. So I'm not going to get away from it. I'm not going to sit here and say I think he's the best guy ever. The guy looks a complete dick. But anyway, now that I've got out of the way, he basically ran the story that the partners he had with this had sent him an email saying bad news, and the bad news was that A, we're not going to be ready for this media event, B, my backers are saying that we need to cut you out, and we're going to sell it on ourselves, and it's nothing to do with you anymore, it's ours. So what started off as TechCrunch's or Aaron Ting's original idea, and hence why the name the Crunchpad, it looks like they've tried to take over it.
Wow.
And it just seems bizarre. Proper infighting.
So we're going to lose out on something good, well, potentially, because...
What's interesting is a lot of sceptics have said there's no way they could ever have done this anyway. If you read the story quite carefully, he does say this is just his side of the story.
Mm.
And if you were that close to launching it, if you're 3 or 4 days away from launching it, do you not think you'd be able to save it somehow? Instead of just putting up in your blog that this has happened. It looks a bit of a kind of grubby, you know, attempt at getting hits.
Well, and yeah. Maybe it is.
So a bit of a shame. What's really interesting is it came out yesterday is the guys that are originally stiffed the TechCrunch team. It's planned a media event for Monday.
So and are they announcing the successor, if you like?
Well, he will allegedly give his side of the story and also demonstrate the device in a video call and in private briefings. So. At the same time, Arrington's come out today and said we've already started with legal actions. So,
well, if he's just been chopped out of something that he wasn't a big part of course he's
exactly.
Gonna, and so we're not going to see this thing anyway.
I mean, the guy Arrington is a lawyer, so whether you like him or not, he's probably got this. Well, he has got the smarts, obviously, because if you look at his website, he's not daft.
Okay, well then I would imagine this is a gone thing then, because it's never going to reappear.
Yeah, well, it's not just that they're missing a window. Everybody's exactly. It looks like next year is the year for this Apple tablet. There's more and more different media outlets are starting to show these kind of 10-inch type front ends for their content. So Time Magazine came out with theirs last week. The New York Times has got a new way of navigating through their content, which is using a lot of the HTML5 technology.
And we still don't know what's happening with the Microsoft stuff, do we?
That looked really nice as well. So I think this,
yeah, you're right. Their strongest aspect was the fact that they were going to beat everyone to market, but they're just not going to anymore.
You know, so they wanted to be able to be market and wanted to be cheap, and it looks like they're going to be neither. So we'll see what happens on Monday.
Yep.
Another mythical product is ever closer with the announcement that GT5's demo, and it's a time trial demo. Will be out on December the 15th.
And a commercial demo at that, really, isn't it?
Well, it's a competition, actually.
Exactly. So they've obviously got a bit of money for doing this, probably.
Yeah. So you get to race seemingly a brand new track to GT5, or to GT itself, and you'll be racing a Nissan 370Z, which means absolutely nothing to me. And if you set a fast time, you can then be put forward into an elite group of 20 drivers who will then secure a place at the GT Academy. Ooh.
So they're going to choose 20 drivers nationally all around, well, around participating countries, and then winners of those.
This is the European bit of it. America's got a different, same track, but a different competition.
I'm pretty sure they've done this competition before.
They have.
Because I've seen some stuff online of people racing around Silverstone in Nissans.
Yeah. So they've done this before. Good time to get a demo out before Christmas, to be honest.
Yeah, especially on a computer game that it's good to know that it still exists, at least.
Well, I don't think anybody doubts it exists. It's always been this doubt of, can you not just get it out there?
Yeah, why can't they get it out?
You know,
that's
it's been
I
two or three years that they've been saying, well, we're going to add Top Gear videos in, and we're going to add this in, and we're going to add that in, and it's just been endless.
It's 2 or 3 years of actually having a game that we could... When was the actual prologue released?
Oh,
it
I don't know.
It must be over a year ago now.
I think it's more than that. It's two.
So there's working code. The code's just going to put itself out of date, I would have thought.
Mm.
Maybe that's the next worry, is that, you know, it's...
Well, they've added things like, you know, they've got a proper damage model in there, which is new.
And this thing will sell consoles, so there's going to be some people pushing for this product, you know, really strongly. So the reason it's still not there is a bit mystifying.
Well, it still seems like March is the date.
I still say that I probably will get a PS3 once this is out.
Yeah, I think you will.
And there's plenty of other people like me.
Definitely. Speaking of technology selling something, World Cup is to be shot in 3D, was announced this week.
For all those people with 3D TVs.
Well, I don't know. This to me is one of these stories that defines the future. See, when I was like a kid and people were talking about, oh, you'll have this in the future, this was the kind of thing. So 25 games are to be shot in 3D. using Sony technology and cameras. We spoke a few weeks ago about 2010 was the year for 3D, and Sony's going to push it hard. And I think they must believe they've got some, you know, unique products. And yeah, I guess with the camera technology plus the TVs, plus they're looking at PS3 and moving to 3D in 2010 as well.
So I wonder whether they're going to show all these games in cinemas.
Well,
that have this 3D technology.
There's going to be, seemingly they're going to be broadcast live at fan festivals in seven cities around the world. So London, Berlin, Mexico, Paris, Rio de Janeiro, Rome and Sydney.
In 3D?
In 3D.
Okay.
There will be a DVD, or I guess it'll be a Blu-ray, will come out after it, you know, with packaged highlights from the games. And they're hoping to announce some broadcasting deals in the coming months. And, you know, for UK, I can only see that being Sky. They've talked about wanting, and they still, in their latest press releases, they're still saying that, you know, for 2010, they still hope to have a 3D channel up and running. But it'll all depend on any TVs been out there.
Yeah, or it's either you have to have 3D technology in the TV, or you have to put up with red-green type 3D, don't you, which is the easy solution.
I'm pretty sure they're all chasing after the new TV hardware.
Yeah, so I think we've talked about it before. It's not enough at the moment to make me want to change hardware.
No. Well, the World Cup in 2006 was definitely a... I think for many it was the, right, I need to go and get a plasma and LCD because HD's there, and you got BBC HD, and you had, and that was an option to see some World Cup games in HD. And I think that pushed certainly a lot of people I knew, it pushed them into getting the hardware. I don't think 3D is going to be the same because HD had been around for a year or two before the World Cup.
Yeah, we're yet to have any proof that this is actually going to add anything.
And it sounds like the TVs are going to come out, what, between February and May, potentially. And is it the right technology? I think there still is some confusion about whether it's Panasonic or Sony's technology is the better one. And it seems a bit too early.
Yeah, so we'll see how it plays out. Who knows? But yeah, it doesn't stop anything from being recorded in 3D, although obviously they have to do it in one particular technology. But I guess once you've got the two streams from two video feeds, you can encode them up however you like.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. And that's us for this week.
Other than our most important bit.
It's our picks. So I'm going to go first this week just to change it up a bit. I use Macs, as everybody knows. I will prattle on about Macs to go blue in the face. One of the things that is not very good in the Mac is Flash. And the actual Flash plugin is always a bit CPU intensive and just a bit kind of crappy. So two applications I like to use, and they're both free. One's called Click to Flash. I'm not going to read out this that URL.
No, I don't think you could.
No, without getting sued. I'll put it in the show notes. So Click to Flash is for Safari, and on the website it says it blocks evil Adobe Flash.
I've never heard it called evil.
Evil. And what you basically get is any Flash content. You get a nice kind of gradated grey background, and if you click on it, it will play it. If you don't want to see it, it doesn't launch the Flash plugin. And it's not just, I mean, it's not just like the video sites and stuff. It's some of the sites you go to with their adverts. It's just crazy how much Flash is kicking around. It just feels all completely unnecessary.
Yeah, game sites now have gone down the Flash adverts massively.
Yeah. And it's not just game sites, to be honest. It's just a lot of content now is sitting, and it takes up so much room as well. So, that's displays this grey background. Click on it, it'll play the video. Certainly if you're on a laptop, so you're getting much better battery life just because it's not auto-launching the plugin all the time and playing this. One little nice addition is that you can actually select on YouTube to play the videos using the H.264 stream, the QuickTime stream, instead of Flash, which actually looks a bit nicer. And you can get the same for Firefox. So there's an add-on called Flash Block, which you can install, and it'll do much the same. So that's my picks this week. Chris, what are yours?
This week I have picked TrueCrypt, which is basically the mother of all drive encryption software, really. It's open source, so it's free. It's available for PC, Mac, and Linux. And it's just a very slick bit of software. You can encrypt whole drives. You can create mini drives that are encrypted. And it does everything on the fly, and it just acts as a hard disk would. So you just drag files into it or out of it. So it's a very easy bit of thing, bit of technology to use for, I don't know, anything you want to keep from prying eyes. So whether on your laptop you want to make sure that no one can see your documents and things like that. Yeah, that's as far as we'll go on that, shall we? If you happen to have downloaded something and have had a letter from your ISP, you could put them in that kind of folder.
You sound then, so bitter.
So you can even go further than that. If you're particularly worried, you can create false bottom files where there's a double level of password encryption so that it can unencrypt one level. So they talk on the website, like if you're under duress, so if you're being tortured or your family's being threatened, you could pretend that you've unencrypted a folder when you haven't.
Mm.
And you can even go so far as to having false bottom operating systems, so you can have a whole operating system operating underneath another one. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, TrueCrypt is probably a good option for you.
It's a very good option. I've used it myself, and it's excellent.
And if you're carrying anything around on a pen drive, a USB drive that you don't want handed around, so you could even then start carrying around with you, passwords or numbers that you don't want people to get hold of. Pretty safe in knowledge that if they do pick up your pen drive, they're not going to do anything with it.
Exactly. It's just a peace of mind, to be honest, more than anything else. That's what I like about it.
And if you do want to store your passwords on your hard disk, another option, bank account details, it gives you that option if you want to.
No, it's really, really good program. Well, I was actually quite impressed with it. It works really fast as well.
Yeah, it is slick. On slightly older machines, it does take, some effort to, it's very quick in that you don't really notice it.
No.
But on an old machine, I have noticed that it does creak along sometimes if it's trying to do a lot of things.
Mm. But no, that's a great pick. Thanks for that, Chris.
No problem.
And that wraps up the show.
It does indeed.
If you want to find more about us, we are on digitaloutbox.com. We'd love to hear from you, either via email, info@digitaloutbox.com, or via our Skype account, which is digitaloutbox, which is the same for our Twitter account. Chris, where can we find out more about you?
I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK, and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
Fantastic. I did notice there was a little bit of love for Gavin and Stacey this week.
Oh, yeah. I'm really enjoying it.
It's returned to form, I must admit.
And
series 2 was crap.
I watched series 1 and 2 very quickly on DVD, one after the other, and I thought they were classic. I'd like to see them end it this season, because I think that'll end it, mean it will just be perfect.
One was good, two was rubbish. I quite like the Christmas special, but I've liked the last two episodes.
Yeah, definitely. Love for the Gavin and Stacey here.
And my blog, indie.net, and my Twitter is Shweepa. So, thanks for joining us again. We shall hopefully catch you before Christmas.
Let's hope so.
Catch you later on. Bye now.
Bye.
Our first story this week is back to our news. Oh, see, I can't.
Change the angle, change the starting.
Oh, this is what happens at work when I'm doing one of these bloody well screencasts. See, because I feel like I've got to say something, I can't do it.
Change the way you're saying it. Change it to.
Yeah.
Go straight to the story.
There's my phone ringing now, yep. So that'll probably drop my connection again. I'm waiting until that rings. Answer the fucking phone. Oh, I'll definitely make sure that's nothing.
Your testicles will be gone.
Exactly. Right.